Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. And we welcome you to the show. Today is Friday, Aramaic Friday, and it is May the 30th, 2014. Our calling number is 646-200-4169. Press 1 and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. We are honored and blessed that you've chosen to join us again today. Jeannie and I are still on the road in this life on the road game that you get to hear lots of details of as we travel around the globe. But we're almost back home. We're actually in Bristol, Tennessee, and have just returned a rental car. So I'm going to be relatively quiet for the first few minutes because we're just pulling up into the driveway to unpack the car so that we can get on the road down to Asheville, North Carolina to spend some time with Dale. Monday night is going to be Aramaicisms at the workshop in Asheville, or just north of Asheville, and you can check on the website. We'll start Sunday afternoon with Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights will be free workshops. Saturday, we're doing Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. So if you're in the area of Asheville, North Carolina, come and join us. And Dale Hoffman is with us. We certainly appreciate Dale. His website is www.daleallenhoffman.com. And he is our resident Aramaic scholar. And Dale, we sure appreciate you getting to share with us, and we look forward to hearing some of what's happening with your writing. So, Dale, welcome to the show. And it looks like we've got a little bit of technical challenge here for a second. Dale, when you get clicked in there, we'll get to hear your sweet voice. And we're having challenges with connecting to the Internet. What fun life is on the road. But in any event, I'll fill some space.
Hello.
Well, there you are. Hey, you made it, sir. Welcome.
I'm unmuted now.
There you are. The internet connected finally, so we get to hear your voice.
It's funny.
Tell us about what's happening with your writing.
Oh, it's, you know, my book, it's almost done. It's so close that what's funny is I sat down today after, I did a little bit yesterday of like organizing of it, but after weeks of being away in and out of town, I sat down today to start a sort of week-long final run to finish it up, and I realized that it was more finished than I had sort of thought it was. So now there's just like basically a few spaces I've got to fill in, and it's exciting. I just wrote today a section for, a couple days ago, I wrote a section about toning with doing vocal toning, not just of Aramaic stuff, but even just basic sounds with children. And then today I wrote a section for families, and I wrote a section for couples about how to, well, it's not really even a how-to. There's no how-to book. It's kind of what I'm telling people is this is just something you do from your gut, from intuition. It's not some technique to adopt, but just kind of sit across from your partner in life and, you know, take a few centering breaths and bring your hands together and then open your eyes and spend some time gazing into their eyes and uniting your breath together, and then just start doing some basic tones and learn some of the words or basic phrases from Yeshua and try toning those as you're gazing into each other's eyes. It really launches relationships into an entirely new level. And the magic that I'm focusing on in the book is that, number one, even though the Aramaic and Hebrew cultures, you know, had certain definitions or meanings for some of these words, they don't necessarily always line up with what everybody else's was. And, you know, my focus is that this isn't about what the words mean so much as it's about our experience of the tones themselves, and even more so, the part that really for me is where the true sweetness lies is after you actually do the tone, to just be in the silence of that space after that and feel the echoing of that reverberation that moves through the body temple after the tone, which is one of the sweetest spaces, and to be able to focus on that in our intimate relationships, not necessarily in the words of communication, but the places where we communicate that don't have words. And, you know, one of the inspirations for me with this was actually a film that helped me through, you know, processing the death of my mother, which of all films, it sounds surprising, but it was The Shootist, starring John Wayne and Scatman Crothers and Ron Howard and a bunch of other people, Lauren Bacall. And it's funny because in that film, it's John Wayne coming to terms with cancer, and Jimmy Stewart too, John Wayne coming to terms with cancer in the movie while in real life he had cancer that he was coming to terms with. And it was like the beauty in the film lies not so much in his words, but in the places where he either didn't say the script or just had those open spaces where it was in his expressions. And that's kind of what I'm focusing on, is getting beyond the words on the page and the words that we speak, or what things are, you know, to be defined as in the scholarly realm, and what the accepted definitions are, and go into the space where we're open with just feeling and having a direct experience with those words and teachings and sounds, instead of tacking on someone else's predetermined, you know, ideology of what those things mean. And it's something that our children come in with naturally, and then we sort of pile so much stuff on top that we don't pay so much attention to those more feminine, open-flowing aspects of life. And even in my talks lately, I've been telling the crowds, I've been saying, I'm not really here for you, I'm here for your children. I'm here to help you let go so that they can be exactly who they are, and so that we're not needing to force them in one direction or another, but just to allow them to shine their light naturally rather than this sort of westernized education system that just piles all this information on top of them. Let's let them be who they are and let them create heaven on earth unhindered by all of our predetermined notions of what we think things should look like. And the toning is a strong part of that. So the book basically revolves around not just Aramaic toning, but basic sounds and how sound and vibration is the basis of all that's manifest. And when we open ourselves up to those less defined, less masculine, more feminine forces, that rucha, the ruach of the heartbeat and the breath and all of these eternal forces, life changes, because we're not looking outside anymore. We're sensing that from the center of our own being, and it's a profound way to live.
Awesome. Well, the focal point in terms of words that you are using, is there a particular direction you're taking it in? You know, Tuesday or Monday night, we're going to do Aramaicism. How is your book going to relate to what we're planning to do on Monday night?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, what I do is I take, for the first book, I wanted to keep it very basic. The second book's going to be more in-depth with each of the sounds of each letter in the alphabet, and then it's going to have more words and more phrases. And then the third book's going to integrate things like the Lord's Prayer and toning, tone poems and blessings and stuff. But in this one, I focus on some of the words that we don't really have a good handle on in the modern Christian sense. We basically lost the meanings. Words like rucha, which was translated as spirit, words like amen, which we say in modern day as amen or amen, or in the Jesus teachings in the King James, amen is translated as verily, verily, or assuredly as well. Most people don't even know that. And I focus on some of those words, the ones that are right there in front of us that are most common that we don't realize, and ones that have really good, rich tonal qualities to them. And then I'm just going to put forward just a few phrases, four phrases from the Jesus teachings that are pretty easy enough for people to learn. There's going to be a CD that's in the back of the book so they can hear what they sound like and to be able to, like words like te malkuta, thy kingdom come, well, it's what it's translated as in the King James, and people be able to just keep that and keep it on the tongue and be able to, like, move into the toning of that, like, te, and being open in that. Te malkuta, as an example, is one of the phrases that I, before I get up to speak, there's usually, not always, but there's two sounds that I often make. One is the aun, that first sound of the Lord's Prayer, and the second is te malkuta, thy kingdom come. And, of course, the kingdom's within. So it's not kingdom come at me and hit me in the face so much as it's come through me, to birth through me. But it's amazing in toning circles to have people, you know, being able to do those. But the middle section of the book, though, is about reframing the way we look at, it's called The Word, Seeing Beyond the Letters on the Page, is the second section. And it's about reframing the way we look at the Yeshua teachings, that it's not about these ideological concepts in our head, but rather something that's so much deeper that literally was lost to a certain degree going into Greek, but kind of the coffin was almost nailed up going into Latin, because a lot of the damage that didn't happen in going into Koine Greek did happen going into Latin. And then by the time it got to English, it's like, forget it, because they took on poetic meanings, which sound really beautiful, but regardless of how beautiful the poetic meanings of the King James Bible may be, many, many, many of those are so far removed from their first century meanings that they, regardless of how poetic they are, it's almost like we have no concept of, in the Western Christian sense, of what he was even saying, so much so that we use words like Lord and even catchphrases recently like washed in the blood of Christ or born again, all these phrases that actually did not exist in the time of Jesus. We don't realize that we're relating from a 300 or 400-year-old European context of what those things mean rather than what was there originally. So and to me, what's important is to get people following their own gut, their own heart, their own deeper aspects of being and do their own translations, which is something I'll do more in the third book as well, having people actually sit down and do their own translations of the teachings where I give them different sort of possibilities, nuances of definition for each of the words, and then they move toward a common thread of meaning that goes through those, and understanding that, in my opinion, in what I've learned over the last couple of decades of study, is that a 5-year-old child understands the teachings of Yeshua and what they really mean in their deepest aspects more so than someone who's been a westernized Christian preacher for 6 or 7 decades in many cases, because the westernized preachers, so many, not all of course, but more often than not, it's an indoctrination process of memorizing meanings rather than removing all those layers, all those bushel baskets, and let the meaning of itself to birth through us from within, rather than what we were programmed to think that something means. And it's a completely different way of looking at his teachings. That's why I'm always really careful to tell people, you know, don't take my word for it. Put it into practice. See if it works. If it works, then obviously it's correct. If it doesn't, regardless of whatever scholarly definition basis you have behind it, it's probably incorrect. So just to be informed by the gut and the breath and the heart, going back to the original meanings.
Well, it sounds awesome. We're going to look forward to it. When do you anticipate it's going to be published? Is it going to be available in a printed form? And is it going to be an e-book
it's going to be
Amazon? Your website,
yeah, it'll be
website?
It'll be via everything, and I've chosen to not, I've actually turned 2 publishers down already, really big ones, but I don't think they really got what I was, one, I didn't think they had really the promotional muscle behind. The other one, I don't think really understood what I was doing fully. They wanted to sort of sugar it up somehow. I won't be self-publishing. I will be going with, I'm not sure which publisher yet. I would suspect that it would be early 2015, start fresh next year, and it would be ebook, you know, and printed. It'll be everywhere. Everybody's going to know about it because I'll be shouting it from the rooftops. I've been traveling so much, and the way I've been putting it across as a metaphor is with all of my travels and everything that I'm doing, I've got vegetable oil in a pan, and I'm heating it up in a cast iron skillet, and this book is going to be water that I'm going to throw into that pan, and it's just going to pop because there's so many people that are really ready and open and waiting for it. And the first three books are completely laid out. And I'm honestly, I'm excited to get even beyond those first three books to get really deep into the translation work itself and start releasing those types of things, like going into all of the what was in the canonical Gospels of Yeshua and then going into the Gnostic Gospels and slowly, you know, in my life, consciously releasing more and more and more until ultimately my goal is to have most, at least most of the Jesus teachings from all kinds of different aspects, to have those released in a series of volumes where people can get the accepted canonical Gospels, lots of the different Gnostic ones. And I don't really care so much about the other stuff that wasn't the teachings of Yeshua, all of the begatting and all that. I really couldn't care less. I really just care about, like, you know, that what lit me up when I was 7 years old, the words in red, so to speak. And I know people are ready and open to receive those on a much deeper level. And I also, I listen to the scholars. I read the scholarly stuff, all the different trade newsletters and things like that. But I'm not doing this for scholars. I'm doing this for just average, everyday people. And that's what moves me forward, is knowing that I really don't, I can say it with such a joyous smile on my face that I love to not be called a real scholar, because that means that I'm open and I'm not stuck into some sort of box or fence, and I'm free to do whatever it is I feel led to do. And yeah, it's a good place to be.
Well, I congratulate you. It took me 17 years to write my first book, so that's pretty cool. If you're that ready, it's pretty awesome. Well, I don't know if Jeannie is available to check on callers. Jeannie, are you hooked up with us there? Let me just... Life on the road. It's fun. Well, you know how that goes. Any callers, Jeannie? Can we have a hand up? Oh, Jeannie's cut off. So it's us, Dale. We're it for now.
Okay. Well, it's funny. I'm at home now because I'm usually somewhere different every week when I'm calling. Actually, last week I was in a park in Asheville, but a lot of times I'm going from one place to another, but I'm home for a few weeks. I'm excited about you coming next week. We've been sending it out like a megaphone all over the internet and making phone calls to people and making sure everybody knows.
Cool. Well, I'm certainly looking forward to being there and watching how it all unfolds. We'll be actually at the Wisteria, just north of Asheville in, what town is it?
Weaverville.
Weaverville, that's it.
Yeah, it used to be... It used to be Secret Gardens. It was a raw foods and, like, juice fasting retreat center a few years back. That was really incredible. I haven't been there since it changed hands. But it was really magical inside and out, really magical there. Right on the main street in – right on – literally on Main Street in Weaverville on the main drag.
My understanding is that Jacob is still the owner. They changed venues for a while. And
oh, okay.
To the thing they're doing, but it's the same folks, and it seems like really wonderful people. Had a good conversation with him, and I think we're going to see lots of support coming from his direction and getting people to join us in. Why is this happening to me again? Sunday afternoon, 1 till 5 o'clock in Weaverville, North Carolina. We're on it.
Yeah, it was Jacob back then. He was great. I used to have a lot of conversations with him. So, yeah, In my work lately, my focus has really been, like as I've been traveling, it's been on asking a lot of questions and asking people, rather than, you know, having people and I've always done this to some extent or another, but I've really been focusing on telling people, look, don't just memorize things that I'm telling you. Open up your heart and feel your way through this. Move into the more inanimate, you know, feminine aspects of your being that aren't so clearly defined, and understand that this really isn't about understanding what Jesus said. This is about living it. And when you're living it on those deeper levels and you're not looking to live within some sort of man-made ordinance, whether it be man-made in terms of municipalities or man-made in terms of religion, which, of course, we call both of those laws when neither of those are law, when you open yourself up to those much more feminine rucha forces, those feminine forces of the deeper aspects of living from the heart and living from within the breath and living, you know, literally having the Holy Spirit or the all-embracing breath of God, Ruach HaKodesh, living through us, we're able to get outside of our heads and we're able to get outside of what seems to be the world out there and all of the belief systems and fences we're trying to live within, and we let go of the fences and we let go of the ideologies and the belief systems and let life live through us. And the only way to really do that is to be in touch with all those different aspects of Rucha, of all those different aspects of those eternal forces that are innate guidance systems that are already in us. But it's not something that is obvious and glaring out there in the world. It's not, you can't find it in a page on a book. You're not going to find it in somebody's words. You're going to find it in the space between the words. You're going to find it in those deeper aspects of being, those aspects of being that children are naturally in touch with because it's who they are, that eventually, you know, in so many cultures get basically piled under lots of different things and dumbed down. We already are what we're looking for, and I've really been focusing on that lately, telling people, you know, let go of needing to understand the words that I'm telling you. Understand that all I'm doing is talking about the essential nature of who you already are. Connect into that. Don't look at me as some sort of, you know, having something that you don't, whether it's information-wise or spiritually or whatever. You are what you are looking for. You know, in the words of St. Francis, what you're looking for is what is looking. And I really have become so conscious in the last few months of how what I'm really doing is paving the way for the children. I'm absolutely paving the way for those generations that are coming through to be able to just, like I said, to just let them be open. And, you know, I was flipping through photographs yesterday of Heartland from back in 1995 that I hadn't seen in a long time. And I was looking at the different kids that were there. You know, Krista was really young. Michael J. was, I don't know, maybe 16 or 17 or something. And seeing how that was such a reality shift for me and coming back to actuality in realizing that life doesn't need to be in all of the turmoil and the drama, but you can disengage from that and come back to the center of your being and live with those eternal forces. And life takes care of itself if you live within the way those forces naturally expand through us. And it's interesting, you know, with the book coming to its completion and me finding these photos, and even crazier was actually not crazy, 2 days ago on the 28th, I was digging through photos of my mother's. I was just looking for some things, nothing necessarily in particular, and I found my certificate of baptism from when I was about 3 weeks old, and it was dated May 28th, 1972, and I was like, that's interesting, and I went, hold on, and I turned and I looked at the calendar, and it was May 28th, 2014, and I was like, whoa, hold on, I never knew this certificate even existed. And then on the left side, of course, it said basically about, you know, using water and baptism, which is something that I do in a non-religious sense in my own teachings. And I thought, wow, there's a lot of things, a lot of circles that are completing in my life lately. The book coming to a point of completion, going back and finding that certificate and realizing that it's about, you know, helping the young ones coming in be in the state of being that I felt when I was five before I sort of bought into the world, so to speak. It's amazing. It's the visions that started for me decades ago, so many are coming to fruition. It's pretty amazing stuff, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful. Pretty powerful. Well, we certainly applaud the work that you're doing and how you're touching the world. And Gene's got Dr. Tim on now. Dr. Tim, how do you be today, sir?
Fabulous. Thank you for asking. Hello, Dale.
Hello.
I'm just sitting here soaking up the conversation. and thinking about a lot of different things. I was listening to Guy Finley's The Hidden Secrets of the Ten Commandments yesterday and again today, and it really echoes what you're saying, Dale. Don't even try to get hung up on the words, because the words that were given for the Ten Commandments are so far removed from what was actually said. But if you look at it as an access point into a deeper truth of who you really are, and you open yourself to receive what that truth is, then it just starts to amplify and magnify like crazy. I had another thing happen this week. I talked earlier about an incident that I did a worksheet on in my support group on Tuesday night. And then Wednesday morning I did some more work on it, and it opened up to a memory of really intense panic and fear and sadness around my first communion, because I was raised Catholic and I was 7 years old. And my panic and fear and sadness was they were asking me to promise to be good at a level that I knew I couldn't do. Mm-hmm. And when I came out of the release, and the tears were flowing and I was crying, when I said the words, "They don't know what they're asking me to do. You know, I'm only seven. I can't keep every thought pure. I still want to smack my sister because she stole my cookie," or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And the tears just flowed. And I came out of that with a real deep appreciation for how at 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 years old, I knew these people in this big organization were asking me to mold myself into something to fit their model that I just couldn't do. And there was deep sadness and deep fear about not being able to live up to that. So,
Tim?
Yes.
I'd invite you to notice the level of goodness that you embody in your world and in your work, and the seeds that were planted have manifest. And maybe they didn't know what they were asking, and it didn't necessarily mean that you were going to fulfill it all that day. But, you know, I look at you as a model in the world, and the goodness that you exude toward people in what you do is awesome. So maybe some meditation on the gift side of that might be appropriate.
Well, I join you in that. I accept that, and I realize I've had that passion ever since 3 years old. And I'm simply talking about a false impression I took into myself at that age. And ever since that crying and release and recognition about how I'd buried that on Wednesday morning, it's shaken up a lot of things. A lot of memories are coming. A lot of energy is flowing. I have a little healing crisis, as you call it, going in my lower back. And so it's all moving. It's all good.
Purification is a wonderful thing. And you know, the gift that many people are given by those early years, that somehow the world is, in many cases, is misinterpreted or turned into something destructive, and yet people who weren't raised with that, you know, some level of goodness. I know that Jeannie's family, I've been to 3 or 4 of their family reunions now, and it's a 5, 6-day, 7-day event out on the farm where anywhere from 75 to 200 people gather and hang out and do food together. And, you know, that family system is based in an ethic of goodness. And, you know, in all, I don't know how many days I've spent in that environment with that many people, I have not seen a struggle or a vicious word pass between them. They're living out that ethic, and those who don't have that ethic implanted early in their lives are living out a world in their own family systems of drama, of trauma, of terror, and with no tools and nothing to turn to for strength to move through those things, it's a challenge. And of course, we all get the opportunity to work through the parts of us that don't tap into that level of true human expression. We all get our opportunity to do that. And by and large, that's handling the genetic component of our lives, our eternal lives. And it's certainly an awesome opportunity when, you know, one of my favorite Aramaicisms that we'll talk about probably Monday night, Dale, is the one that says, you must forgive from your heart the wrongs of your brother, which, you know, in Greek sounds like some sort of a bleeding heart statement, but really says that if you have something you've denied and dissociated from inside yourself, you've created an unnatural condition called an unconscious or a heart. In the Aramaic, it was the heart. And you, when someone resonates that in you, you put it into your brain's image of them. So your brother's the one with your problem. And, you know, when Yeshua was speaking that 2,000 years ago, he's saying, you got to go into your own dissociated mind. You got to clean out everything you're projecting on everyone else. And it's a huge piece of work to do, and a piece of work that has probably been misunderstood. And one of the reasons for that, those misinterpretations, has been misunderstood for centuries and centuries, because in the Western world, we couldn't even translate that word heart. We didn't know what it meant until just a few decades ago. Any thoughts on that, Bill?
Yeah, you know, it really brings to mind for me how I so clearly see, it's funny, it's like I so clearly see my role in the work that's coming through me, and it's almost like the role that I have is doing my best to just be open in the moment itself and not be, you know, and let go of any kind of need to define the role, which is the funny thing, because it's like with a lot of the, not only with the word heart, but so many of the teachings of Yeshua, my gut told me certain things of what they meant, although I may not have been able to put it into words at the age of 5, 6, 7, or 8. I could feel what those really meant beyond any kind of, you know, pre-established translations or definitions. And it's like I have such a gratitude for my ability to be able to take a few steps back and not necessarily to use, you know, the depth and the breadth of all of the study I've done, but to let go of needing to let it make it fit into that, but just be able to see the words on the page, to pull back from all of the trees that I'm in and pull back and see the forest as a whole, and to be able to see in the deeper aspects of what a lot of the things really meant. One of those aspects is that word heart, which, you know, it's almost like if we're honest about it, especially when we're younger and we haven't been overly indoctrinated, we know what that means when someone says live from the heart on some level, but still, it was actually the work of Freud and, of course, Carl Jung especially, that was able to bring forth how there's that intimate relationship between thought and feeling, and that all emotions are direct result of the thoughts that we think, which, of course, are thoughts are things. Thoughts would be considered masculine. Thoughts are sort of, you could almost say the thoughts are even bushel baskets that create the world that we see, whether that world is real or not. And the dichotomy or the duality between the true nature of our being beyond thought and the thoughts that we think, it's the duality between those aspects that cause emotion in our life. And of course, when we're more in tune with those natural forces that I was speaking of, when our thoughts are in tune with those natural forces, we feel the joy, and we feel that true essence, that light, and that amazing, I don't want to say happiness, that feels so conditional, but the true joy and ecstasy and bliss of being. Whereas, of course, if our thoughts are out of alignment, if we're not allowing our thoughts to come from somewhere deeper, but instead from the programming of, you know, quote-unquote, the world, that can put us out of alignment with those natural eternal forces that birth through us. And the more out of alignment with those forces are, the more intense or the more what we would call negative those feelings may feel. And then, of course, it's a matter of going in. I'm so grateful that I started with what Michael is teaching with the Aramaic forgiveness work. I can't say thank you enough for that, because it started me with the base of understanding that if I'm having what I feel is a bad experience in this moment, it's because I'm somehow relating. There's a layer, there's a bushel basket over the light of this present moment that's a relation to a concept that was programmed into me in my past. And it's the thoughts that are related to that. And it's a matter of getting in, recognizing those thoughts, and removing whatever that goal is that related into my hidden past, and to be able to remove that so that I can be open in the forgiveness, in that open experience of the present moment, and be able to feel my real heart rather than that sort of fake heart almost, but all of the thoughts and ideologies that we lay on top. And it's literally just, if we could get that, it's not about letting somebody else off the hook. It's not about the pardoning. I mean, that's a nice thing to do, but if you're constantly going into feelings of turmoil and sadness and grief and negativity and anger and hostility, and you're constantly pulling the plug and saying, okay, I let you off the hook, I let you off the hook, I let you off the hook, there is no actual forgiveness. It's amazing when I, just in the paper today, I didn't even read the column. I just looked at the title, which was something to the relation of how God always forgives. And I chuckled. God always forgives when we allow him to. And I chuckled because there is no condemnation except in our own hearts. It's in our own minds. There is no judging God. It's like, look, either you're in alignment with the natural forces or you're out of alignment. We're the ones that do that to ourselves. It's us. We need to let ourselves off the hook and take that, you know, through our own breath, through the responsibility of our own thoughts, our own emotions, and our own reality, and bring it to that the breath of the mother, Ruach HaDeKudsha. And no matter what you bring to her, she releases. But it's not really even her. She's that super processor in the mind. It's us. We're the ones that need to let go. There's nothing outside. There's no person outside that can heal you. It's all an inside process. And it's like I'm able to say this with such a smile on my face. I've really taken flack over the years of you know, because I've said things like that, including in rooms with people that say, you know, no. We have to stick on the path. We have to stay with what's been predetermined, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, look, put it into practice. If it works, then I guess you're accurate. If it doesn't, you're probably not. And get your own ego out of the way. Let your heart be open in the process and let it teach us rather than us force our own ideologies into the teachings of Yeshua or the teachings that are on the page. And that's what I really see as my role, is almost like a non-role of just telling people, look, stop interfering. Just let it be what it is. We don't need to change the message. We need to change our understanding of it. You know, that needs to transform. That needs to grow, and that needs to go through a constant shift to be more in touch with the present moment. The present moment's already perfect. It's already beautiful. It's already whole and complete. And it's the past thoughts in our mind that tell us it's not, that we need to remove in order to be present in the moment. So, again, I've done it 1,000 times, but it'll happen another 1,000. Michael, I thank you again for being that original spark for me in terms of the Aramaic teachings, for opening me up to that. And wow. Thank you.
When you talk about being able to step back from the trees to see the forest, it is unforgiveness that keeps our nose pointed into that tree so that we can't see beyond it. We think, oh, this is life. What's going on in my brain right now is it. It's the end all and the be all. And the truth is, all it is what's going on in your brain. If there's hostility or fear in it, it doesn't have anything to do with what the actual present moment holds. And so it's the key, you know, study is good, but without forgiveness, it just becomes, you know, as you've shared before, all the scholars get together and debate, the root of the word debate being beat. They beat each other with, oh, no, I know what it means. Oh, no, I know what it means. And, you know, when we actually apply it and use it, it's a whole different game. And that's what allows us to step back, to get our nose out of that tree, to get our nose back from the forest, to be able to see the whole picture and recognize how the whole game really works. And join you in that appreciation for having access to that. It is such an overwhelming appreciation for me, myself, so often that I had the opportunity to come in contact with Yeshua's Aramaic words, and ideas and then become the person who took them into the laboratory, the classroom, to test them to see if they worked, and to hold them, to keep correcting them till they actually worked. You know, the final test as to whether or not the work from the Enlightenment book from the Kabbalists was accurate or not was, can we take it to the laboratory and make it work? If not, then back to the drawing board. If it doesn't produce what we said, what it said it was going to produce, then obviously we're still not accurate. And so that becomes such a key. And you know, we were talking about people, the importance of people doing their own translation. And we've actually, you know, probably in the next 10 days or so, we'll have, it's in the printer's hands right now, the new edition of the Kabbalist manuscript, the Enlightenment book, which has the first century dictionary in the back. Do you want to talk about that idea of doing your own translation work?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I do it in some of my gatherings, but it's a process of what I like to do is I'll put down, like as an example, take one of the phrases of Yeshua and write down that what it looked like. You know, I'll put the King James at the top just as a reference point, although I don't really do that too much anymore. I'm sort of letting go of that. But I want to let go of it, but I realize it's a good entry point for other people. So, but I'll put the King James at the top. I'll put what it looks like in Aramaic in terms of writing and then a pronunciation. And then I'll give all the different nuances of what all the possibilities of definition, of nuance, of what each of the words are. And then what we do is we actually go into basically like in a state of prayer or meditation where we focus on our breath for several minutes and get into that deeper space of being. And then what I have them do is to actually write down, go toward, look at, like, let's say there's 10 words in the phrase or something, to actually go toward the words that light them up. And in all of those definitions, go toward and write down an example for each word of the ones that light them up. Some things are real simple. Some words just mean not, as in or, not or no. So it's real simple. You've got your word there. But it's a lot of those deeper words that are where that real magic happens. And it's like for me, it's not about fitting into the definitions. It's about finding the common thread between all of those different words that, you know, we are told define it, and finding the common thread of meaning that runs through each of those words. And it's an experiential thread. It's not a thread that you can get to from your brain. You can't get there from your head. You can't get it from the memorization of Aramaic dictionaries and any kind of ideology or thought system. It's something that has to be informed by the heart. It's informed by the breath. It's informed by again, Rukha, those feminine eternal forces of the divine. And when we can actually do that and have people write their own translation, and I really couldn't possibly care less about whether there's, you know, someone in a, you know, at a desk somewhere that says, oh, well, that's not accurate. What's, you know, who are they to say that what they have is completely accurate? If we can just bring these teachings back to the heart and get out of the head, and understand that it's not, as an example, you know, at the Why Again workshop, it's not about understanding everything that you're putting on the board with, you know, on the dry erase board. That's a piece of it. What it's really about is putting the pen to the paper and living the process itself. That's where it happens. And if we could just get that, to understand that someone else's translation, I feel, a 10-year-old's translation, would be just as valid as someone who has been an expert and has studied for 7 decades of their lives. We must get back to that true resonance of being that's there naturally with us, the natural light of our being, and understand that it's not about fitting into anybody else's pattern or framework or fence. It's about being who we are at our deepest level, and that's what those teachings of Yeshua exemplified more than any other teachings I've ever seen. But only when we're able to get our head out of the way and let it be informed by the heart and find a balance between the brain and the heart and between the mental concepts and the experiential aspects, and right there in a sweet spot of the center between what we understand in our mind and the direct experience of our being, right there in the sweet spot is where the present moment exists, and that's where the forest is. That's where the wholeness of the experience is. And that's, as an example, when we do translations in groups, that's what makes people pop. It's what goes pop, and they go, oh, and they'll just burst into tears and laughter, and they'll just howling out in ecstasy, like, oh, my God, I see it. I see it now. And I myself, two plus decades in, I can still look at a phrase that I've been looking at 2,000 times in 22 years and go, oh, whoa, wait, or maybe one little bit more of insight or information comes in, and all of a sudden I see it with fresh eyes that I never saw before. That would never happen if I was stuck in a book or stuck in some kind of a frame that I'm not supposed to go outside of. And yes, I get criticized for coloring outside the lines, and I couldn't possibly care less. What matters to me is that I'm open, and that it, you know, she, that essence, reveals herself to me through those teachings. And I'm so, I'm just grateful. I'm grateful to be open for that, and I'm grateful to be clear that I'm really here to let the, you know, a lot of the sort of older generations, I'm really here to let them know, hey, guess what? Let's look into the deeper aspects of our being and get out of the way so that these kids can shine, rather than fitting into manners, you know, like we're taught when we're kids to have polite manners, and manners are nice. But what can happen, as an example, with manners that are inculcated in childhood, as an example, they can be a stifling technique. And rather than letting the true essence of a child's being live and shine and breathe and beat like that, what they become is a cap off of a child's true light. And that's why in my gatherings, much like in a lot of yours, Michael, I let kids, people are like, oh, I can't come because whatever, I've got my six-month-old, I've got my three-year-old. I'm like, bring them. And I'll say something right off the bat. If the kid starts getting, you know, a little bit loud, I'll say right off the bat, I'll understand that if there's some sort of issue anybody's got here, that's in your own heart, because I don't have it and I'm not feeling it. What I feel right now is joy, and I feel bliss to have this little light being here. If they go really crazy and they really start disrupting, then I may say, okay, you know, let's look at this here. But it's one of the things that I've really been doing my best to integrate children into everything and do toning with children. It's amazing with toning with kids, because I don't tell them what the word means and then tone it. We actually make the sound and we do the toning several times, and then I ask them how they feel about it. What do you feel? What does it feel like to you? What's the quality of these words? And they're usually very close to what the, you know, the predetermined meaning is. And the thing about working with children is that it really brings me back into a recalibration with the eternal truths of those teachings, because if I don't understand those on a really deep, intimate level, I won't be able to explain it to a child. Doesn't matter of all the scholarly frou-frou and big words and all the verbose meanings I can throw out there, if I can't explain it to a five-year-old, then I don't know what it means. And if I don't know what it means, it usually means the reason I don't know is because I haven't been living it, and I haven't been in the experiential aspects of that. And like I say, to me, the opinion of someone who's never heard the teachings of Jesus until today, and they sit down today, right now, having first heard those Aramaic teachings and do a translation, those translations are just as valid to me as the experts that have been around for decades. And that doesn't mean to turn ourselves off to any aspect of expertise or whatever, but yeah, it has to be informed by those deeper aspects of the heart. The less tangible, less defined, you know, so much more feminine aspects of the natural forces of these teachings. And the world's ready now. And like you said, we couldn't translate heart before. They're ready now.
So you're saying it's not in getting stuff that we're happy? That's not where it comes from?
Oh, no, that's exactly what I'm saying. Acquire, pile it all on top of yourself. And not at all.
Interesting process, isn't it? It's there's a movie out there called I Am, and I don't know whether you've seen that or not, but it's pretty powerful.
Absolutely.
And it's actually the producer of all the Jim Carrey movies became a multimillionaire from producing those films, and then he discovered something different, more akin to what you're talking about. And all of a sudden, it becomes a whole different game. And I'm not sure how this fellow's, the fellow who did I Am, powerful film, he basically says, what's the problem with the world? And he says, it's the title of our film, I Am. And, you know, I'm now talking to you, my audience. And then at the end, as he goes through it, he says, and now I hope that you'll be able to say, because you're going to change the way you behave, what's the solution in the world? I Am. And we actually just recently posted a post, and I'm not sure how his spiritual journey relates to Jim Carrey, but there's a post we put up there where Jim Carrey is saying something to the effect of, I wish for everyone that you would get all the things, all the stuff that you desire, all the fame, all the success. I hope that you get it all, because then you're going to discover that's not where it's at, and you're going to start the real journey. And I thought that was pretty insightful for Jim Carrey to have to say.
Mm. Yeah, Tom Shadyac is the producer of the film. Amazing, because he did. He went from a huge multi-million-dollar home to a mobile home. It's still a nice mobile home, but he really went through a shift in his being. It really is a fascinating film. There's so much great spiritual cinema coming out now, just good stuff, amazing stuff.
Well, should we check with Jeannie and just see if anybody happens to have a hand up with an Aramaic question? Jeannie? Are you with us, Jeannie?
Nobody has their hand up, and there's no comment in the chat room. It's just quiet.
Oh, okay. Well, Dr. Tim, do you have any questions for, especially after the visit you guys got? You were blessed to have a couple of weeks ago with Dale. Any other questions that have come out of that experience or the support?
Well, there was one thing that was asked, and this caught me off guard because I don't know the debate around it, but when you were here, Dale, Reverend Tom asked about the phrase, the Son of Man.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, essentially, we don't know what that was referring to. Can you give me a context for where that comes up and how that might ostensibly be different than the Son of God? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the one thing we do know, or that, you know, at least in terms of research, the difference between Son of God and Son of Man is that the Son of Man is the one who still is bound into the, you know, into that reality structure that Michael would talk about. You're still in the world. You're completely lost in the world, in the thought structures of the world, the ideologies of the world, etc. The Son of God, that word God in Aramaic, Allah, means the absolute only being. It's the one who's transcended the thoughts of the world, who's let go of the mask, who's dropped the veil, and is now in those deeper states of awakening. That's what we do know about it. But, you know, there's, and I will say this, one person who really grasped the difference between Son of God and Son of Man was Paramahansa Yogananda. If you read The Second Coming of Christ, and you can get through it if you, you know, if you're diligent, you can get through it that in about, oh, maybe a year or so. It's like two volumes of like 1,500 pages apiece. But it's so fruitful, and there's such a depth, but he really goes into a great discourse in the difference between Son of God and Son of Man. Son of Man being that, like I say, the one who's the human self, kind of like when Yeshua looks down, you know, at his mother and says, you know, who are you, woman, kind of thing. Talks to his, which sounds like it's so deprecating putting her down, but it's a way of saying, you know, look, I'm not born forth, you know, of physical people. You know, I am the one birthing itself continually through time. And it's basically, you know, Son of God is the difference in that. It's the transcendence of the ego. It's the dropping of the veil. It's the lifting of the mask and doing the forgiveness process to such a point that the bushel baskets are gone, and now there's just the light being. But, you know, that's about what we do know about it. And there's lots of theological arguments that people would make in one direction or the other. But, yeah.
My input on that would be that Adam, it's almost man, being the red clay, is this carbon-based memory system. And, you know, we've talked about the Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of information that can get into conscious awareness is 9 bits. And when that 9 bits is filled, that this carbon-based memory system, through the law of resonance, is always shooting up information from the past and trying to convince us that that's true. And if that's our, you know, Yeshua talks about it in terms of being our father. If that's our father, if we are the offspring of the hostility and fear-based, carbon-based memory system, then we're sons of men. And there's a particular passage where Yeshua is talking to some of the Pharisees, and he says, you are sons of your father, and I have a different father. And when we engage, my take would be that when we engage in the forgiveness process and collapse that hostility and fear-based stuff, the 9-bit mind now becomes a screen upon which the Creator can write, a screen upon which love can give us direct perception of our highest guidance in what's going on in the world. When Yeshua is saying, you have a different father. My father is that of love, and yours is, being a son of man, yours is carbon-based memory. And he recognizes his own process because he refers to himself in both cases and realizes when he's coming from that carbon-based memory place, and then realizes when he's collapsed that, when he's forgiven that, then all of a sudden, and of course there are those who say, well, no, he never had anything to forgive. But if you look at his words, he says, in one particular instance, they call him perfect. And he says, who do you call perfect? No one is perfect except the one I'm trying to connect you with, the one that I'm trying to support you in going to as your father, as the one that will write into your conscious awareness, into your mind, the direct knowing that love has of what your world and what your next step in life really is. So if we are following the guidance of carbon-based memory, we're sons of men. If we're following the guidance of love of the Creator, then we're sons of God. And, you know, there's a particular point, I think it's in Acts, where Paul talks about, you are the offspring of God. And that's what we're designed for. And yet the world, right from moment one, you know, we have that thing we ask people, hold the newborn child. And everybody experiences the newborn in the same way as this awesome presence of love. And the world beats in on us to try to take away our relationship, the fact of being directed by the Creator directly, and have us become sons of men. The average non-being in the world strives to force us out of the guidance system of love into the belief systems and the guidance system of men. And whichever one is running our perceptual mind at the moment, we are the offspring of one or the other. And Yeshua says, in order to get to the point where the Creator is where your prime relationship with is all you have to do is forgive everything in carbon-based memory that robs you of that, that takes you out of awareness of that. Every rage, every fear, every guilt, every grief. And when that carbon-based memory system finally shuts up, then the guidance of men stops. And when that stops, and you know, it's just an instant resonance system, when we quiet that thing enough that it just shuts up, then we really, you know, as Yeshua directed, go into the closet, close the door, get into that quiet space, and be willing to hear love's guidance. Let love write upon the screen of our minds the direct guidance for the next moment. And then we function totally, completely as the offspring of the Creator, as we were designed to function. And the carbon-based memory system finally only brings information forward when it's asked to, because it is now leveled out. In essence, it's silenced. Its noisemaker is gone. And all it is a database that if you ask it for information, it gives it to you. But that information isn't your source. Your relationship with love is. And we are down. That was a fast hour. We are down to just the last few seconds, so we're going to have to close out the show. Once again, I'll just remind everybody, Sunday afternoon, 1 to 5 o'clock, we're going to be in Asheville, North Carolina, doing Why Is This Happening to Me Again, if you go to the website. And we'll be doing a workshop Sunday afternoon, Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night. And we will also be doing Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing on Saturday. So we hold the space for everyone. Appreciate you joining us. Give the world the best gift you can possibly give. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
Evolving continuously.